Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Volabon.
And today we want to talk to you a little bit about a subject that was sent in to us by one of our listeners. Listener Kevin sent us a request via Facebook, and Kevin wanted to know about stealth technology. So, yeah, being stealthy. I'm an expert at this because...
No, you're not.
What are you talking about? I'm like the stealthiest stealth who ever stealthed.
Like super ninja of the 24th and a half century is what you're saying.
To be fair, I'm more pirate than ninja. So, okay.
Are pirates concerned with being stealthy?
You have to know the weapons of your enemy is what I'm saying. And pirates and ninja being natural enemies in the wild, it's important to study your enemy's techniques.
All this talk of pirates and ninjas reminds me very much of the Cold War.
Right, and that is an important reason why stealth technology even exists. So thank you for getting us back on track, Lauren. So stealth technology, in general, stealth technology refers to the types of tech we use in aircraft to make them difficult or impossible to detect, mainly via radar, although we also think about things like infrared scanners, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And really, to understand how stealth works, we first have to understand what radar is and how that works.
Oh, right. Radar works thanks to two basic concepts, and that's echo and Doppler shift.
Yes. So, yeah, an echo. I mean, like if you were to shout out, you go visit the Grand Canyon and you shout as loudly as you can, you might hear after a few seconds your voice coming back to you. And that's because when you shout something out, your voice is traveling out in sound waves. They will collide with the other side of the canyon, and some of those sound waves will bounce back at you and eventually arrive back to where you are. And if you are loud enough when you make the initial sound, you should be able to hear some of that sound return. So that's why you've got that little delay.
Right, right. And now if you were to measure the length of time that it took for that sound to bounce back to you and measure it pretty accurately, then you could mathematically calculate about how far that sound went.
Yeah. And of course, you also need to know some other factors like air pressure, humidity, things that would affect how fast the sound
the
will
speed
travel.
Of sound, sure.
Yeah. Because as we know, sound will travel at different speeds through different media. And that even includes different atmospheres. So if you are, if you're really at sea level, sound travels at a different speed than it would if you were at 30,000 feet. But it's not necessarily detectable to a human ear, but
right.
It would definitely
it's not
be
appreciable
measurable
in day-to-day conversation, for
right.
example.
Yeah,
but, I don't go down to Florida and go like, man, it's really humid. I can barely hear you from this 0.50,
It's taking longer for your words to hit my ear. Yeah. But anyway, the same principle works on radar, except instead of sound, we're talking about electromagnetic waves or radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so you use radio waves to you project them out, and if they come into contact with something, some of those radio waves will bounce back. So if you have a receiver, then you can detect those incoming waves and determine by how long it took to go out and back about how far away that object is. Now, you also mentioned Doppler shift, so we have to talk about that.
Oh, right, right. And Doppler shift is, for example, why a car's horn sounds higher pitched when the car is moving towards you than it does when the car is moving away from you.
Yeah, there's a great article on How Stuff Works that explains this that I like a lot. Marshall Brain actually wrote it. He's the founder of How Stuff Works. And in it, Marshall talked about how if the car is sitting still, and the driver leans on the horn for a minute, first of all, you must be in Boston. And second, that means that if you are far enough away, let's say that you're far enough away that the sound takes 6 seconds to get to you, all right? And you're sitting there, that means that the horn will have been sounding for 6 seconds before you can even hear it.
Right.
Right, but then it'll last for a minute. That's how long, because the person's leaning on it for a minute.
Is leaning on their
long
horn, okay.
Now, if that car is traveling toward you, then the pitch of that is going to be higher than it would be if it were just sitting still. Those waves are essentially compressed.
They're compressing, right,
yeah,
as they're moving towards you.
A higher frequency in the same amount of time. So, and then, of course, if the car goes by you, you've heard this if you've ever heard a siren when an emergency vehicle has either come up behind or approached you and then passed, as it's traveling toward you, it's a higher pitch, and as it's going away, it's a lower pitch, and that's because of the frequency of the waves and the way that the object making the sound is traveling versus the sound itself traveling. So the interesting thing about Doppler shift is if you can detect the, if you know what the frequency of the waves were when it was going out, so in other words, you've got a transmitter, right? Mm-hmm. That's your radar transmitter, an antenna that's transmitting the high burst of high frequency radio waves. You know what the frequency is when you transmit. When the frequency comes back, it's going to be, or when the radio waves come back rather, it's going to be possibly at a different frequency than it was when it went out. Now that means that the object it hit was in motion. If it's a higher frequency, that means that object is essentially moving toward you. If it's a lower frequency, that object is moving away.
Right. So the and by measuring exactly the difference in the pitch, you can measure how fast it's going.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least get a estimate.
A pretty good idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because we're talking, you know, radio waves move essentially at the speed of light. So, you know, the delays here are really, really super tiny. And the transmission is like, is a fraction of a second long.
Right.
So you transmit these really short bursts and
then turn off the transmitter and allow the waves to come back.
Right. And you'd measure the delay between when it went out and when it came back, and you measure the Doppler shift, and that gives you an idea of the position and speed at which the object, you know, is moving. So if it's moving towards you or away, and it's very useful for detecting things like aircraft. And in fact, we use it all the time, not just in military applications, but air traffic control.
Sure.
So here's the thing. If you are running a military operation and you want to run surveillance or some sort of sortie against an enemy territory, then you probably don't want your vehicles to be detected.
It's generally bad policy, yeah.
Yeah, because that means that they can be shot down or otherwise compromised. And so you want to be able to run your mission without any kind of entanglements. And so that's when people started thinking, well, the radar is a really useful tool for detection. How can we get around radar so that our enemies don't know when we are there?
Right.
And that's what really got the United States thinking about stealth technology. And really, it was the Cold War.
Yeah, yeah. This was all during the 1970s. Everyone was really tense.
Yeah, yeah. The Soviet Union, or the then Soviet Union, mm-hmm. and the United States had been in a Cold War pretty consistently since shortly after World War II. And by the 1970s, this had really, we were seeing escalation on both sides.
Right.
Arsenals were getting more and more powerful and complex. It was a lot of posturing on the part of both countries.
Oh, definitely.
And the rest of the world was mostly saying, guys, can we chill out?
Can we all just simmer?
Yeah. This is getting a little tense for all of us.
Can we go get a pizza?
Yeah, because once you start talking about how many times each country could destroy the other country via nuclear weapons, like we could destroy the United States 10 times over. Well, we can destroy the Soviet Union 12 times over. And everyone else is saying, really, is there this much need for these many weapons?
Right, right, yeah.
Well, one of the thoughts was, how can we deliver a nuclear payload to an enemy territory without
without them detecting that we're there and stopping us before
right.
we can.
Yeah, before the aircraft gets shot down.
Or even, you know, how can we run spy missions and, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And so at the time, the main aircraft that was being used in bombing runs in the United States was the B-52 bomber. And the B-52 is not a stealth vehicle at all.
Anti that.
Yeah, it's actually, has a quite a large radar footprint. It's mm-hmm. very detectable. But it can travel quite fast and it can carry very large payloads. And, it was first introduced back in 1955. And it's known for being a reliable aircraft. So much so that there are still more than 80 B-52s in active service. And, it's actually projected, after a couple of upgrades that'll happen between now and 2015, it's projected to be an active part of our Air Force until the 2040s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is a
This
is a longevity issue here. I mean, it's definitely a workhorse, but it is not a stealth vehicle. So the United States started to open up the possibility for different companies to bid on developing an aircraft that could stealthily fly and not be detected by radar.
Uh-huh. And still have the carrying capacity to deliver large nuclear payloads.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the other part of it. Yes. Scary, scary stuff.
Well, there was simultaneously development of other stealth technology going on that we'll talk about a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But that was more on that research kind of side of things. And
right.
The B-2, which is what came out of, all that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, the B-2 was the big one. I mean, that was the one that was, unveiled and talked about the most. The B-2 is also better known as the stealth bomber.
Mm-hmm.
It's also called the B-2 Spirit, and most of the individual planes are called the Spirit of something or other.
Oh, okay. Cute. Yeah.
And, it was first unveiled publicly on November 22nd, 1988 in Palmdale, California at the Air Force Plant 42. That same year, another stealth aircraft was unveiled. That was the F-117 Nighthawk, and we'll talk about that more in a little bit. It was Northrop Grumman that ended up winning that bidding battle. And they're the ones who developed the B-2. It took about a decade for them to make it, and about $40 billion in research and development.
Yeah, which was up over what they had originally stated they might be able to do it for.
Yeah, and also the planes themselves, the bombers themselves, were more expensive than what they originally intended. They first thought that they could deliver the entire order for,
of 132 planes.
132 planes for like 40 billion, 20 billion. Well, I think it went from 20 to 40 to 70.
Yeah, yeah. The original contract was for 22 billion, from what I've read.
Right.
And then as of 1988.
When it was unveiled,
the total price had jumped to like over 70 billion.
Yeah.
And
eventually they figured that each aircraft would cost about $1 to $2 billion
a piece.
And so it got really expensive really fast. Like that ended up being the target of a lot of criticism.
Oh, sure.
People saying that these contracts are all based on estimates that were not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not the companies were aware of how unrealistic they were was a matter of doubt, and it just got into a really sore subject. But something happened that ended up kind of taking a little of the sting out, which is that in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed.
And suddenly people didn't really have so much of a need to carry large amounts of nuclear warheads across
enemy territory. Yeah.
Really quietly and, quickly. Yeah, so
when your chief nemesis goes under, and of course we can, today, when you look at the United States and Russia, there are other issues where you might say things are starting to turn around at some points. There's always tension.
And there's always tension between various world powers like that.
It's like North Korea and China.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
North Korea right now. Yep. There's always chicanery going on.
Yeah, right. So anyway, because the Soviet Union collapsed, that helped the United States come to the decision to reduce the order from 132 to 21 aircraft,
mm-hmm.
20 of which are still flying around today.
Right,
and I'll
talk
a little bit about that. But before I do that, I guess we should kind of describe what the B-2 looks like in case you guys have never seen one. They're funky.
They are. The design is called a flying wing, actually, because with most aircraft, you've seen an airplane.
Right.
Many times. It's got a body, it's got wings, it's got
stabilizers
coming off in little strange angles. But this flying wing is designed so that the entire craft generates lift.
Yeah. So it doesn't have all that, like the fuselage and the wings, it's all one body.
Uh-huh.
It's not like, you've got a tube that's the fuselage, and then you've got the two wings attached to that. No, it's all one giant wing.
Yeah.
And like you said, you just go fast enough and it generates the lift it needs to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminating
the tail and the fuselage reduce drag and it.
Yeah. And also means that because of its design, it doesn't have, like it's easier for it to avoid radar detection based on the stuff it's made of, and we'll talk more about that and how the stealth stuff actually works in a little bit. It is 172 feet wide, which is 52.4 meters.
Which is a bunch.
Yeah.
It's not small.
It's essentially, if you were to look at an American football field, a B-2 bomber from wingspan, from wingtip to wingtip would be more than half the length of an American wow. football field.
Yeah. And this is a vehicle built for two people.
Yeah.
To
it's,
sit in.
It's, yeah,
so,
it's a two person aircraft.
Yeah. It's also, 69 feet from, tail. I mean, quote unquote, tail to tip. It doesn't really have a tail.
Yeah.
I guess the length of the where end the, bit of the
yeah,
wings.
Exactly. Where the B-2 stops being. To where the B-2 starts being.
Right. And is 17 feet high.
Yep. And it can fly about 6,000 nautical miles, which is about 11,112 kilometers, before it needs to refuel. And if you have an aerial refueling as part of its mission, it can go 10,000 nautical miles, or about 18,520 kilometers. That's a long trip. And we've seen some recent use of that. It can carry 20 tons of conventional and nuclear weapons.
It is considered a high subsonic flight, which means that its top speed is just under the speed of sound. Something like, 1,000 feet per second?
Something like that. Yeah. It goes about as fast as an aircraft can go before it starts becoming supersonic.
Right.
Right.
So which would cause a boom, which is obviously
not something you want a stealth vehicle to do.
Right.
Yeah. If the stealth vehicle causes booms, it's not that stealthy. Pirates have discovered this to their own unfortunate detriment, right? Cannons go boom. Whereas the shuriken goes, yeah. We all are familiar with the shuriken sound. So, remember I said that there are 20 of those 21 aircraft still flying around. That's because in February 2008, there was an accident during a takeoff at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam, and that resulted in the loss of the Spirit of Kansas B-2 bomber. And 19 of those 20 are at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, because I don't say Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is at Edwards Air Force Base in California, which is used for flight testing purposes.
Okay. The thing about these B-2s, I guess anything that is covered in this stealth technology paint and tape and stuff, is that all of that is extremely temperature and weather sensitive.
Yes.
If you get it too warm, it's like a mogwai. If you get it warm, if you get it wet,
if you feed it after midnight,
it starts to fall apart, and all of that has to be reapplied frequently, basically every time that they take it out of these temperature controlled hangars.
Yeah.
And they've started designing portable temperature controlled hangars so that they can run missions overseas.
Right. Yeah. That is one of the big drawbacks to the B-2 is that it does require these climate controlled hangars to essentially live in between missions, because otherwise the material that keeps it stealthy would degrade very mm-hmm. rapidly, and it would not be a secure method of delivering payloads under the radar, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you're not literally going under the radar. Also recently, very recently, and as of the time we're recording this podcast, the United States had sent two of the B-2 bombers over to South Korea for training exercises. This is all part of that escalating issue between North Korea and South Korea, Japan, United States, where, you know, the training exercises are this annual exercise
uh-huh.
that happens over there.
But they don't necessarily, right, yeah, need to be.
Yeah, it's kind of a show of force.
Hey guys, remember what we got? We got these things.
Right, right. It's essentially, because North Korea has a history of posturing and threatening South Korea as well as lots of other nations. And then the United States and South Korea have a history of sort of giving a show of force, not directly against North Korea, but just kind of saying, look at all the stuff we have.
Yeah.
Think twice before you start to make
start
threats.
Anything. Sure.
So, and some of the rest of the, lots of the rest of the world ends up saying, guys, again, can we, you know, you remember the Cold War and you remember how tense things got?
Remember,
it's kind of happening again.
Remember that pizza? Wasn't it good? Can we go back to just
yeah.
the pizza?
I mean, I'm not one to judge whether or not it's the right call, because that's way above my pay grade. And I honestly couldn't tell you what's the right thing to do. But it was definitely one of those things where the United States is saying, look, we want to show South Korea that we are not going to abandon them, nor are we going to abandon the other nations that are often threatened by North Korea, Japan being one of them.
Sure.
So really it's the United States kind of saying, like, you guys aren't alone. But, you know, it's one of those deals where when you read the news, it gets a little nerve-wracking to see kind of the escalation of tensions.
Yeah.
But besides the B-2, there are a couple of other stealth aircraft that are worth mentioning. There's actually several aircraft that have been in either prototype or development stages, but I wanted to specifically mention a couple that were developed and tested, or at least tested, at one of my favorite places in the whole wide world.
Area 51.
Yeah, it's right there behind Disneyland. There's Disneyland, Area 51, and then Smithsonian.
not that those are locationally adjunct, just that's the
operational
order. That would be terrific. That wouldn't be, I mean, it would be a pretty bad secret base if,
it would also be a pretty warm Disneyland.
Yes.
To be out there in the middle of the desert. So Area 51, also known as Groom Lake, is a place that the Air Force has used for testing, various prototype aircraft, secretly, to make sure that they were going to meet the military specifications and needs, and be away from prying eyes. Now, the B-2 wasn't necessarily flown there. It may have been, but
not that we know of personally.
Yeah, but there are a couple of other aircraft that were known to have flown out of Area 51. One of those was called the HAV Blue aircraft, which later became the F-117A stealth fighter, better known as the Nighthawk.
Right.
And that one also was unveiled in 1988.
Although, from what I understand, it had been kicking around in research a lot longer.
Yeah, the very first HAV Blue, I think, flew sometime in 1977? Yeah, so 11 years
Or maybe 1978. January, February, I think, is the first test flight.
Gotcha.
Of that.
Yeah, so.
Fun factoid. I'm pretty sure that before it was called, HAV Blue, the very, very, very first name for this technology was Project Harvey, based on the, film and stage show Harvey, wherein, Jimmy Stewart's talking to a giant invisible.
A rabbit that's visible only to Jimmy Stewart's character.
Right.
Not to Jimmy Stewart. Although that would be even more meta and awesome. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, though. That's interesting.
Supposedly.
I wrote the How Area 51 Works, and I did not know that. That's really cool. So, of course, I might have written that in that article, and I just forgot. The other thing about that is that Lockheed was the one that designed the HAV Blue / F-117A. Northrop Grumman also created another stealth aircraft besides the B-2 bomber. It was called Tacit Blue.
Oh, right.
And that was a stealth surveillance aircraft. So this was just designed to fly over and essentially spy on nations. It wasn't a combat vehicle, and it was never developed beyond the prototype stage. In fact, I think there's one in a museum at this point. I'd have to go, and I'm sure I wrote about it in the Area 51 article. But the F-117A actually did go into production, so that's a stealth fighter, not a bomber.
Although it could
also carry nuclear payloads.
Mm-hmm. The original contract was for 5 test craft and 15 production craft, or operational.
Yep, and it's been used in lots of United States operations, including Operation Desert Thunder, Operation Allied Force, Operation Enduring Freedom, and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And during Operation Allied Force back in 1999, it was the one and only instance of an F-117A being shot down. It was shot down by an anti-aircraft missile that was operated by what was at the time the Army of Yugoslavia. Because it crashed and seemed to be relatively intact after it crashed. The pilot, by the way, ejected safely and was recovered by the U.S. forces, so he was safe. But the aircraft crash landed, clearly, because there was no one flying it, and was apparently landed mostly intact.
Ooh.
And in fact, it seems that Russian and Serbian forces were able to observe and possibly even copy the stealth technology, which means that the stealth technology was compromised as a result of that crash.
Ouch.
It is, again, the one and only time that we have lost a stealth aircraft in combat situation.
Right.
As opposed to an accident like that
yeah,
one B-2.
Yeah. I think that I've heard of at least one test accident that happened where,
And then apart from the F-117, which, by the way, was retired in 2008, turned out that it was just it wasn't really meeting the needs of the military at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to rely more heavily on the F-22 Raptor, which also has stealth technology and also was designed by Lockheed. They retired the F-117 in 2008, but there's still a fleet of them. So,
right, yeah. I think that 59 in total were built from 1981 to 1990.
Yeah, and there's at least some of those still in existence. They're just not in active service.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess they could be put back into active service if necessary, but the F-22 Raptor has essentially taken over their spot in the military. And, that was unveiled in 1997 and that remains in service. So that's kind of a rundown on the aircraft, the main aircraft in the United States that use stealth technology. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about how stealth technology actually works. So, we'll do that in a minute, but first let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor. Okay, back to stealth. So, we know that stealth is all about avoiding radar, and we know about the various aircraft that incorporate stealth technology to some extent.
Right.
So exactly how does stealth work? How can you avoid radar?
Well, so this comes in a couple different parts. First of all, you can design the shape of the plane in such a way that it bounces the radar rather than directly back to the transmitter receiver apparatus, somewhere else entirely.
Oh, I see. So let's say I've got a flashlight and you have a mirror, Lauren.
Yep.
And you're just holding the mirror straight up to me. I turn the flashlight on and I can see the flashlight reflected right back at mm-hmm. me. But if you were to tilt that mirror so that the top of the mirror comes closer to you and the bottom of the mirror is further away from you, then the beam is beamed up rather than at me.
Right.
So if you were to design an aircraft so that lots of the large flat surfaces were angled in weird, wonky, Lovecraftian ways using non-Euclidean geometry, or at least some weird angles, those radio waves would not bounce right back to the radar station.
Correct. And also if you use slightly curved surfaces, that will also help because, you know, the same way that if you've got a flashlight and you point it at a curved mirror,
yeah,
it's not going to bounce right back at
you.
No,
it's going to bounce in a slightly different direction. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the stealth B-2 bomber, as well as the other aircraft we've talked about, have these kind of surfaces. If you look at the stealth bomber, you see like there's some large, really oddly angular flat surfaces, and then some other kind of bulgy curved surfaces. In fact, an interesting point. You remember we were talking about that F-117 that was shot down.
Right.
From what I understand, the way that the anti-aircraft missile system detected the F-117 was that the F-117's bomber doors had opened, which increased its radar footprint just enough for it to be detected.
Yeah, yeah, and other things that a plane can do can also throw this off. I mean, if you start to roll the plane, it's going to the surfaces might line up in a different way.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
So that's one thing, is actually designing the surfaces of the aircraft itself can help essentially reflect the radio waves in a different direction. So you send out that burst of high frequency radio signal and nothing comes back. It's the same as if nothing is there.
Oh, right, right. Or, you know, or you might only get as much radio signal back as you would get from a bird or an insect.
Right. In which case you'd say, well,
you'd say,
you know, that's nothing to worry about.
Hypothetically.
Either that or you start worrying about every bird.
Yeah.
Which would probably drive you pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Yes.
So that's one way.
That's one way. And then the other way is to use those materials that you are building the outside of the plane from in ways that absorb rather than reflect.
Right.
Radar.
And this, at first you might think, wow, what kind of special space age technology is this? But then when you think about it, you know, radio waves are part of the electromagnetic spectrum,
uh-huh.
as is, say, visible light. So when you think about visible light, you know, like if you use black paint, that absorbs light. You know,
sure.
it's reflecting some light back, but not very much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, depending on the quality of the paint you're using, how black the black
uh-huh.
is.
It also absorbs heat
yep.
more readily.
Yep. So again, that's the infrared radiation. So.
Uh-huh.
In that case, we already know of materials that can absorb light. So really this is the same sort of thing, except instead of absorbing light, it's absorbing radio waves. And, it could be paint, it can be, a powder-like substance that's worked into the actual composite material that mm-hmm. makes up the plane.
Tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it's this paint and tape that really needs to be replaced each time the B-2 goes out. The F-22 Raptor relies more on the shape of the aircraft than this sort of material, which means that you can fly an F-22 Raptor more frequently without having to replace all those
uh-huh.
Exterior parts or to touch up all the exterior parts.
Sure.
And in fact, that was one of the things that Lockheed put in mind when they started designing the F-22. And it's because they learned their lessons from the F-117 and the B-2 bomber. So, yeah, that's the other thing, is that you create these materials that actually absorb the radio waves. And again, that means that there are fewer waves bouncing back from the aircraft and less of a chance to actually be picked up on radar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the top of the show, I also mentioned the fact that stealth technology, it's not just about radar. That's the primary thing that we think about.
Sure, sure. Well, that's the primary sensor that people are using to detect planes at longer distances than anything else.
Right.
So.
But you can also detect planes either by hearing them, by seeing them, or, you know, by detecting a heat signature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the heat signature thing, I think that's really interesting. The way the B-2 gets around the heat signature is a very creative exhaust system.
Right, because the way that people pick up on the heat of planes is not by, you know, reading, like, the heat of an engine directly. It's by reading the exhaust.
Right.
So if you take steps to disguise that by, for example, cooling the exhaust off before it actually exits the plane.
The plane, yeah.
Or by putting the exhaust ports on top of the plane, where fewer sensors are likely to be, you know, hovering above the plane than they are on the ground.
So. Yeah. So that's, it's pretty interesting. Yeah. There is this cooling system that the B-2 has. So the exhaust actually passes through this cooling system, losing a lot of that heat. And it just keeps, it's internalized by the plane, by the bomber. And so once the exhaust comes out, it's not as hot as it would be without that cooling system, making it more difficult to detect the B-2 with some sort of thermal sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's also the way the actual plane is designed. It's designed such a way that it's difficult to tell which way it's facing when you just glance at it, because it's got that flying wing structure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just sort of triangular.
Yeah,
and at that point, it's like, eh.
Yeah, so if you aren't able to get a really good bead on it from the ground, it can be very difficult, or from anywhere, really. It can be really difficult to tell what direction it's moving in, which, again, makes it a little bit more likely that the B-2 will be able to complete its mission without any problems.
Right, right. If it's flying at night, of course, the black paint will also help it kind of blend in with the night sky.
Yep. And so there are also systems aboard the B-2 that allow it to locate targets even in darkness. Sometimes you're talking about pilots who are wearing night vision goggles, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's a weapon designed for secrecy and stealth. So,
yeah.
It's kind of a cool thing and scary too.
Yeah. No, they also take electromagnetic energy created on board the plane into account when they're doing all of this. They take steps to dampen anything so that it's not going to be, you know,
radiating outward. So lots of electromagnetic shielding.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you have to think about when you are designing an aircraft that is supposed to be, it's supposed to be able to escape detection. It's a fascinating subject to me. And by the way, this has meant that there's also been developments in radar technology as people have tried to find other ways to make it more possible to detect stealth aircraft.
Right. Yeah. Another instrument on these planes tends to be a radar warning receiver.
Yeah.
So that if you do notice that you're being watched, you can take steps too.
Right. You can at least be alerted to that fact and mm-hmm. try to keep on the lookout for any ground defenses like anti-aircraft missile systems.
If you need to take evasive maneuvers
radio back home and say,
hey,
please advise, do we continue on with the mission or do we abort the mission?
Sure.
And it's fascinating stuff. And we actually do know quite a bit about it, although the actual secret sauce of the stuff that goes on these aircraft remains a secret for obvious reasons.
Oh, right, right. I know that it's sprayed on by four independently active robots.
Wow. Boy, the stories those guys must tell when they're just sipping down oil over at the oil cooler at the end of a long day. My world is a magical world.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the lowdown on stealth technology. It's actually pretty straightforward, and it's mostly all about physics.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's kind of interesting that it took as long as it did to start to develop aircraft that could effectively avoid radar. Because once you understand how radar works, then you already know what it takes to get around it. I guess it just mostly depends on developing the materials that are very good at absorbing radar. Because obviously, you could design an aircraft that has these weird angles on it. Although to make such an aircraft flight worthy, I suppose, is a bit of a challenge.
Right. And that's the other really interesting part about the development of all of these technologies was that it was happening in a time when people were first starting to computer design blueprints.
Right.
And also computer construct, use computers to actually do the construction of materials, you know, those robots that we're talking about.
Sure.
Using robots on an assembly line to extremely precisely put something together.
I mean, I remember when the stealth bomber was unveiled. Do you remember, Lauren?
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, I was old enough to remember this when it was unveiled.
I was 5?
Okay, I was older than that. Yeah, I remember when the stealth bomber was unveiled. I remember thinking it was the coolest looking thing I'd seen since the Lamborghini Countach. And, in some ways it reminded me of the Lamborghini Countach. I also thought it was interesting, even as a kid, you know, growing up in this era of the Cold War, I thought it was really interesting the reaction that people had to this, because people were kind of a little unnerved by the thought of
a giant, silent,
secret aircraft that could be flying over and you would never know. Now, I never know when aircraft are flying over me anyway, unless it's loud enough for me to notice or I'm looking up. Otherwise, I'm largely ignorant of it. So
right.
It doesn't really, that doesn't really bother me so much, but I can understand why it's unnerving.
Uh-huh.
But it's interesting technology, and I'm sure that, the technology itself has advanced well beyond what we're talking about, but because of the very nature of what it is, that information is not easily available.
Oh, right, right. Certainly not to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't.
We're not on that list.
No.
Not anymore. Okay, guys, if you have any other topics that you would like us to tackle, you know, we really enjoyed this discussion on stealth technology.
Yeah,
if you have
thanks so much to Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin,
for
that was awesome. Be like Kevin. Kevin was great. We want more Kevins out there. So if you're a Kevin, or if you're not a Kevin, but you have a great idea, I suggest sending it in to us. You can do that over email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both of those locations is techstuffhsw. We look forward to hearing from you, and you'll hear from us really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.